From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, where we bring you insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most important issues facing you and your family. And it all comes to you from a biblical worldview. So for the next hour, we will navigate the conflicts and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity, integrity, and a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
To validate this gross abuse by the House would be a grave mistake and could set a dangerous precedent for the future. For the sake of the Senate's integrity and to protect impeachment for those rare cases we truly need it, senators should dismiss today's charges.
That was Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer. Despite the efforts from Republicans to slow down the process and hold a legitimate hearing on the articles of impeachment of Secretary Mayorkas, Chuck Schumer succeeded in outright dismissing the charges with no evidence being presented. We'll get the latest from Louisiana Congressman Clay Higgins, who was in the Senate as a member of the Homeland Security Committee from the House. And Israel is finding support from my home state of Louisiana. Louisiana State Senator Valerie Hodges joins me a little bit later to explain. But the question is, will Israel get support from the Biden administration on Friday when the United Nations Security Council is set to vote on a draft resolution that would admit the state of Palestine into the United Nations?
Does the U.S. plan to veto this?
I'm not going to preview our U.N. vote. Broadly, though, Daphne, you know that the United States remains committed to a two-state solution.
That was State Department spokesman Vedant Patel earlier today. This is outrageous, the fact that they would reward Palestine, Gaza, Hamas with statehood after what took place on October the 7th. We're going to talk about it. And this will be a long week for the House. House Speaker Mike Johnson has divided the Senate supplemental funding bill for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan into three separate bills, with a fourth bill that will include a number of measures, including border security. The speaker says this is the only way he sees it possible to get critical funding and support to Israel. Now, a vote is expected on these bills by Saturday. We'll talk about it with Congressman Gary Palmer of Alabama a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Now, speaking of Ukraine, throughout the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russian forces have not only targeted government officials and pro-Ukrainian activists for attack and torture, but also Christians, mounting evidence. Shows that there is targeted torture of individual Christian pastors and believers. Russian troops have also damaged or wholly destroyed at least 630 churches. Pavlo Uigrin, former member of the Ukrainian parliament, will join me here in studio to give us more details. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Chuck Schumer made the Senate look like a kangaroo court, dismissing the articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas without even hearing the evidence of the impeachment from the House. We're going to hear in just a moment from Louisiana Congressman Clay Higgins, a member of the House Homeland Security Committee who was in the Senate for the hearing. But the House is presently holding votes, so we're going to be it's going to be a interesting program as we're going to be hearing from House members by phone from the House chamber. But I want to first go to Victoria Marshall, Washington Watch reporter, who has been tracking today's impeachment hearing. Victoria, welcome to Washington Watch. Give us the latest from Capitol Hill.
Yeah, Tony, thank you for having me. Well, there was no surprise that the Senate tabled the motions to, or the articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. I mean, the Senate Democrats own the chamber, and in order to dismiss those articles of impeachment, they just needed a simple majority vote. So that is what happened over the course of the afternoon.
Now, there were several votes that were taken. The Republicans used a lot of parliamentary maneuvers to try to slow the process down, but it appeared the vote was the same every time.
Yeah, I mean, the Senate, all you need is a simple majority to dismiss those motions that Republicans were trying to delay the vote until later in the month or in May, and that simply did not work. I mean, Chuck Schumer was intent on dismissing these articles of impeachment today, and he did so.
No substance was discussed in the process. This was all focused on the procedure.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there was no trial because Chuck Schumer just filed two motions dismissed. So they did not have any kind of evidence that was brought to the floor. There was really no trial at all. It was just good political maneuvering on Chuck Schumer's part.
All right, Victoria, just stand by. I think we have Congressman Higgins coming to us from the. Do we have Congressman Higgins? Okay, we're not. He's headed to the cloakroom. So this effectively, Victoria, does away completely with the articles of impeachment. It's finished business.
Over. basically, Chuck Schumer, he did not believe that there was enough evidence to impeach Mayorkas because he did not meet the standard that the Constitution sets out for impeachment of high crimes and misdemeanors. So that was his argument in filing these motions. And a lot of and Democrats obviously agreed, and even some constitutional scholars on the right as well.
That's interesting. I would think lying to Congress would be considered a pretty serious issue, especially from a secretary of a Department of Homeland Security, one of the largest departments in the federal government.
Yes, I know Senator Mike Lee made that argument on the floor earlier today.
All right. Well, stick around, Victoria, because we're going to come back to you regarding the United Nations vote coming up on Friday. So there were several House members over in the Senate chamber during the debate taking place. Members of the Homeland Security Committee. Clay Higgins of Louisiana was one of those members. Do we have Congressman Higgins? All right. He's joining us now by phone. As I mentioned, the House is taking votes, and so he's stepped off to the side in the cloakroom to talk to us. Congressman Clay Higgins, thanks so much for joining us.
Yes, sir.
So how would you describe what took place in the Senate today?
It was essentially a procedural battle of the Democrats' efforting to just kill the entire impeachment proceeding and to not allow any debate nor any presentation of evidence, and Republicans using procedural votes and privilege, you know, recognition to force votes to try and assure that Democrats were on record with that position.
Right.
Because if it was up to the Democrats and Schumer, they would have just swept it after one, you know, motion from the leader over there, Schumer.
But as
and
you
then that would have been the end of it. So it was a battle of wits and parliamentary procedure essentially today in the Senate. I was there, and Andy Biggs. We were there for the House.
So, just for full context for our viewers and listeners, you're a former law enforcement officer, been to court many times through the judicial process. Essentially, the Senate is sitting as a jury, as a court, based upon the charges that come over from the House.
That's right.
Isn't it kind of odd that there's no evidence even presented and they dismiss it before they even hear the case?
Unprecedented, sir. In the history of our country, there's never been an impeachment where articles have been passed through the House of Representatives and formally presented to the Senate, wherein the Senate dismissed the impeachment articles without hearing or presentation of evidence,
right,
unless the impeached individual had already resigned or left office, because impeachment conviction was constitutionally is to take place in the Senate after a trial. That's for the removal of that individual from office. He's removed from office and cannot hold office again. The actual impeachment articles are born in the House of Representatives. That's the constitutional procedure.
Right.
So Mayorkas has been impeached. We've impeached him through the House, through my committee, and then from there, we formally presented those articles of impeachment to the Senate, wherein normally a trial would take place.
Right. We knew the outcome.
Similar to what you envisioned, but
Right. We knew the outcome. We knew what the outcome was going to be, that they would not find him guilty, but we assumed that they would follow precedent and allow the evidence to be presented. This sets precedent for the Senate in that they're not even holding trials when the House essentially indicts someone, impeaches someone.
That's right, Pastor. And not only could it had options here, because Mayorkas is a secretary, not a president. So constitutionally and by rules, they're not required to hold a trial on the Senate floor. They could have moved it to committee.
Right.
So there were Senate mechanisms that the Democrats could have accessed to allow at least the presentation of argument and debate and evidence, both evidence that I would have presented as one of the impeachment managers in favor of the articles of impeachment. And this is still America. So the Democrats and Secretary Mayorkas would have had an opportunity to present argument and debate and evidence opposing the articles of impeachment.
Right.
All of that presentation of evidence and debate was shut down.
So Congressman Clay Higgins, let me ask you this question. Does this fuel the lawlessness that we've seen sweep across our country when we're just dismissive of serious crimes like this?
Well, Pastor, it's hard for me to really get my head wrapped around what has happened with this, because I love my country and the core principles that have served our nation so well for 240 years have largely been betrayed by our own Democrat majority in the Senate today. Did America at least deserve to hear the evidence?
Yeah.
And to have a formal presentation of prosecution and defense, a vigorous prosecution and a vigorous defense. That's the cornerstone of our judicial system. And although impeachment is not a criminal proceeding, impeachment through the House and the Senate mirrors the type seeking justice that Americans are accustomed to in our judicial system.
Right.
So American citizenry deserve to hear both sides of this argument, clearly presented within the Senate as envisioned by our founders. And Democrats in the Senate have established a precedent that is frightening to consider just how heavy it is. Essentially, impeachment is over as a mechanism for accountability.
Wow. Congressman Clay Higgins, I know you have to go vote. I want to thank you for taking time to step off the House floor to talk with us and give us your insights from the Senate chambers from today. Thanks so much.
Yes, Pastor. It's wonderful to see you. God bless you, sir.
All right.
America will make it because we are an anointed nation. Thank you, sir.
All right. Congressman Clay Higgins of Louisiana, good friend. We need to be praying. This is, at least they could go through the motions. We knew what the outcome would be with the majority of Democrats. They would not vote to find Mayorkas guilty of the articles of impeachment, but they didn't even go through the process. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. You know, as we were discussing in the last segment about what took place in the Senate today, in fact, senators are still having a discussion about this on the Senate floor, Republicans talking about it. But this fuels lawlessness, in my view, because it's totally dismissive of the allegations of wrongdoing. Now, again, we knew what the outcome was going to be, that the Senate Democrats would dismiss the charges or dismiss the impeachment articles. But at least the evidence should be presented and they should fake like they care. But this is what we're seeing. Political power trumps law and order. I mean, that's the message that was sent today. Well, earlier today, House Speaker Mike Johnson released the text for three separate bills sending foreign aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. Now, the House is expected to vote on this legislation by Saturday, along with a fourth bill that includes a possible ban on social media platform TikTok, provision to help to pay for our foreign aid with seized Russian assets, and some border security issues. Now, this takes place even as at least two members of the Republican conference in the House say they support a motion to vacate Speaker Johnson, a move that would paralyze Congress and create additional chaos as the world appears to be teetering toward a global conflict. Joining me now by phone, calling in from the House floor due to votes that are taking place right now, is Alabama Congressman Gary Palmer. Congressman Palmer, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for stepping off the floor to talk with us.
Glad to do it, Tony.
So give us the kind of what we're looking at, the separation of these funding, foreign funding for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan. It was in one bill coming over from the Senate. It's now been divided up. Give us the latest.
Well, I just finished reading all three bills, and I've got a lot of questions. I just handed it off to my legislative director and told him be prepared because I've written a lot of notes and a lot of questions in the text of the bills. And so I'm reserving final judgment until I get answers.
Now, what will the process be moving forward with these four bills?
Oh, I think these are going to be ruled bills, and unless they've changed their mind again, Tony, and this is every time I turn around, they've changed their mind again. They're supposed to be ruled bills, which will make them subject to a vote on the floor to approve the rule. And I have some concerns as to whether or not that rule will pass. But again, I think there are a lot of questions that need to be asked and answered before we try to move forward with them.
Explain for our listeners and our viewers what a rule vote, because that's a procedural measure before you actually get to the bill itself.
Right. It's really a resolution to proceed, that when these bills come out of the Rules Committee, they're subject to being amended. That was initially what we were told what would happen. But before you can actually vote on final passage of the bill, you have to pass a rule. If you don't pass the rule, you can't bring the bill to the floor. That's basically the majority of the conference making a statement that you're not going to advance the legislation. So it is a critical vote. And I don't know how closely you followed this in the last few months, but there have been multiple times that the rule has been taken down. That's
right.
That's what we call it when it doesn't prevail.
And that is pretty much unprecedented, except in this Congress. Very few rules are taken down, except now it becomes a standard practice, it appears. So how do you get forward? Yeah. If the rule goes down, what happens then? We're talking about aid to Israel. I know that the Ukrainian aid is controversial. Many people are not really excited about that, in fact, opposed to it. I'm going to be talking a little bit later with a Ukrainian pastor who's talking about what's been actually happening in that country and why U.S. support is critical. So what happens to our key allies if these bills don't go forward?
I think we have to try to bring them back under a suspension vote. I don't know if they'd be brought back as a package or separate bills. But one of the questions I have about the Israel bill is that it includes humanitarian aid for Gaza. And I understand the suffering that is going on there, but there are consequences for starting a war, Tony.
Right.
And people suffer those consequences. And I have concerns that the whatever humanitarian aid that we provide, it would be abused,
yeah,
and possibly result in providing Hamas with more ability to fight Israel. And I just, like I say, I'll keep repeating this, there are a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. We just got a couple minutes left, and I know, as I said, votes are taking place. The issue of the motion to vacate coming back up this week with Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky, talking about joining with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Is the House really ready to move back into a period of total chaos like we saw when Speaker McCarthy was ousted?
I hope not, and I was really proud of how Speaker Johnson responded to that, because he was basically given the option of moving all this legislation through and then doing what Boehner did and resign, or face vacating the chair again, and he stood his ground. I'm very proud of him for doing that. But this is self-defeating. It's so destructive of what's in the best interest of the country. And honestly, I felt like taking McCarthy down, we had
right.
momentum.
Right.
Was a bad idea.
I agree.
So we've got 7 months left, Tony, between now and the election, for us to find a way to come together, not only in the House of Representatives, but as a conservative movement. We have got to stop fighting each other. We've got to find a way to get through this so that we come back in 25 with a majority in the House and the Senate and the White House, so that we can do the things that have to be done.
Well, you need to sit a couple of your colleagues down and have that conversation with them, because they're going about that the wrong way. But I agree with you. It needs to happen. Congressman Gary Palmer, got to run, but thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. Gary Palmer of Alabama. Like I said, crazy day. A lot of things happening on Capitol Hill. Don't go away. We're going to take a look at a resolution out of Louisiana standing with Israel. That's next.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Well, this Friday, the 15-member United Nations Security Council is scheduled to vote on a Palestinian request for full United Nations membership. Now, according to reports, diplomats say the draft resolution recommends that the state of Palestine be admitted to membership of the United Nations, effectively recognizing a Palestinian state. Joining me now with more information on this is Washington Watch News reporter Victoria Marshall. Victoria, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
All right, so give us kind of the lowdown of what we're expecting on Friday.
Yeah, so the UN Security Council will be holding a vote on Friday on whether or not Palestine should be a full member of the UN. Currently, it is a non-member state. And what we expect to happen is the U.S. will veto it, and Palestine will not become a member of the UN. The U.S. does not want that to happen because, effectively, the resolution would be a recognition of Palestine as a state. And the U.S.'s foreign policy kind of position on this is that both Israel and Palestine should have direct negotiations with a two-state solution to be accomplished, not the UN.
All right. Well, we'll be watching that vote Friday afternoon very closely. Victoria, thanks again for joining us. As Victoria mentioned, the State Department of the Biden administration has said that they prefer to see broker a normalization agreement between Israel and Palestine, that they want to see this carried out because they support a two-state solution. This is not something that should be the United States should be imposing on Israel. That if it works out and it works for Israel's benefit, then fine. That's what they should do. In fact, after the outbreak of the war, after Israel was attacked by Hamas, the Knesset in Israel passed a resolution essentially stating that they should be left to negotiate what is best for them in terms of their relationship with Palestine. That passed 99-11. Well, this effort is getting picked up elsewhere. In fact, earlier today, the Louisiana State Senate Committee on Commerce, Consumer Protection, and International Affairs advanced a resolution urging the U.S. Congress to support the nation of Israel following the October 7th attacks. And allowing them to determine their future. Joining me now to explain this resolution, Louisiana State Senator Valerie Hodges, who introduced this legislation. She represents the 13th District of Louisiana. Senator Hodges, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it.
So tell us about your resolution and what it would do.
Well, what it does, it expresses support for the nation of Israel. And this year I did a resolution. I've done a resolution supporting Israel every year for the last 13 years. But this year, in light of world events and what we're seeing happen in Israel, the language needed to be stronger. And we're urging and requesting Congress to do everything possible to root out Hamas and to support Israel, get them whatever they need. And we just want our president, we want Congress to hear us. We want to support Speaker Mike Johnson and his efforts and the decision that he's facing. And so the language was very specific about what Hamas did on October 7th. And it was atrocious because not only was it a military campaign, but against civilians and women and men and children. And that just should never have happened. But it is happening. Unfortunately, things are escalating. And what we want to send the message from Louisiana to our Congress is that we support Israel. We stand side by side with Israel, and we need to do everything we can to support that nation.
The resolution passed out of committee today. Is there any opposition to it?
No, there was no opposition at all. We had there were two amendments. One of the amendments that was offered was they didn't like the word exterminate Hamas. So I allowed an amendment to say root out Hamas. And the other one, another member wanted to put an amendment expressing condolences to the innocent Palestinian civilians who have been slaughtered as well by Hamas. So those were the only two amendments. And I feel like it's going to pass. As a whole, our legislature supports Israel, and I have no doubt it's going to pass.
So next,
and we need, and I'm actually, Tony, I'm thinking about asking the president if we can suspend the rules. I feel such an urgency to do this and get this message to Congress. We need to get this through the Senate as soon as possible and get this transmitted to Israel and to Washington, D.C., and to President Biden.
Now, is there a House version as well, or is it just the Senate version?
Senate version.
All right. So next thing, Senate floor, its approval, and I'll be looking for that. Maybe coming up here to Washington, I'll be looking for it.
Okay, great.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, Senator Valerie Hodges, thank you for speaking out on behalf of Israel. Always great to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too. Bye.
All right. Well, folks, you can do your part. You can pray for and stand for Israel as we do, as we're planning to do that on May the 19th with a Pray For and Stand with Israel Sunday on May the 19th. You can find out more about that. Simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. You can sign the pledge to pray, and churches can let us know if they're going to host an event on that Sunday to pray for Israel. And by the way, if you're interested, if you are a state legislator or you know one, I would like to introduce a resolution similar to that Senator Hodges has introduced. Just email me, tony@tonyperkins.com. All right, after the break, a Christian leader from Ukraine is in Washington this week. He's going to join me in studio to share about the targeted persecution and torture of Christians in Ukraine at the hands of the Russians. We've been hearing different stories, a lot of propaganda coming out of the Russian propaganda machine, trying to confuse and muddy the waters. I'm going to talk with a former member of the Ukrainian parliament, a Christian evangelical leader. That's next.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Wednesday. The website, tonyperkins.com. And again, to join with us as we pray for and stand with Israel. Text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. To pledge to pray for Israel and to find out more about how you can be a part of the May 19th event. Our word for today comes from Joshua chapter 10 as Israel engages in a decisive battle. Then Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, sun stand still over Gibeon and moon in the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still and the moon stopped. And there has been no day like that before it or after it that the Lord heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. Now, two keys to overcoming the opposition we see here. Number one, Joshua spoke to the Lord. Our prayer life is essential. The second key is stay in the battle. After marching all night and fighting all day, look at his request. Let us finish the work. Let the sun stand still. He didn't pray for a break or for relief, but for the opportunity to complete the mission. Speak to the Lord and stay in the battle. For more on our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. Well, according to an article in the Washington Post today, a leaked classified document from the Russian Foreign Ministry confirms what many have claimed Russia has been engaged in. Quote, Russia is seeking to subvert Western support for Ukraine and disrupt the domestic politics of the United States and European countries through propaganda campaigns supporting isolationist and extreme policies, end quote. Well, for those who have been listening and watching for a while, you've heard me say I'm skeptical of what is happening in Ukraine. But as I've watched the Russian propaganda machine, which, by the way, some conservatives, prominent conservative media figures, have swallowed hook, line, and sinker, being pulled all the way into Russia. Now, I have a little experience with Russia, okay? And I know they're bad actors. I've been sanctioned by Russia for speaking out about their horrible human rights and religious freedom record. Now, that was in their own country. But now, reports are coming out of Ukraine that Russian propaganda are trying to distort or hide what's actually happening there. They're creating this propaganda that Ukrainians are persecuting Christians when, in fact, the reports show that they are Now, throughout the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russian forces have not only targeted government officials and pro-Ukrainian activists for attack and torture, but Christians, priests, pastors. According to the Institute for Religious Freedom, in addition to persecuting individual Christian pastors and believers, Russian troops have damaged or wholly destroyed at least 630 churches, prayer houses, and other religious facilities in Ukraine. While this may not fit the narrative pushed by even some conservative commentators, I've spoken with Christian leaders from Ukraine who have borne witness to Russia's ruthless and brutal methods against believers. Join me now in studio to discuss this is Pavlo Ungurian. He is a former member of the Ukrainian parliament who is currently in Washington to discuss the persecution of Christians in Ukraine. I've known Pavlo for a number of years. He's come to the States many of times prior to the war in Ukraine. Pavlo, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's a great opportunity to see you.
Well, it's good to see you again, and of course, we've communicated off and on during the course of this war. But let's—I want to stop for just a moment, step back, and give us a little background on what brought you here to Washington, D.C., your background, having been in the parliament there, and why you have come here to the United States.
Oh, yeah. This is a little bit long story. I was born in the Soviet Union. I was born in the evangelical family, and the Soviet Union evangelicals was under persecutions all the time. My grandparents was under persecutions. My grandfather was a pastor. He was a persecuted, and Russia, as a follower of the Soviet Union, continued this practice to kill, to persecute the Christians, especially evangelicals, everywhere inside Russia, but also in the some occupied territories, like occupied territories of Ukraine. As a Baptist in my fourth generation, I understand how important is religion freedom. It's very important for us. But Russia just declare the holy war against the West, against Western civilization.
Let me stop you there for just a moment, because what happened when the wall came down, areas like Ukraine that got their independence became free, there was an explosion of religious freedom, and with that explosion, the church grew dramatically, yeah. Did it not?
Yeah. When the Soviet Union was collapsed, it was a great, great time for the evangelicals to build all the many, many thousand churches. Right now in Ukraine, we had more than 10,000 evangelical churches. But in the Soviet Union, it was just 1,000. And from Ukraine, it was grow also missionary ministry for all Eurasia continent. And more than 60% of Russian pastors are Ukrainian missionaries. And this is why the Kremlin regime so hate us.
So Ukraine has been kind of like the evangelical hotspot of Eastern Europe.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yes.
So what I see, as I was making reference to being sanctioned by Russia, I've been sanctioned by Russia and China for my role on the U.S. Commission on International mm-hmm. Religious Freedom, and we've been tracking now for over a decade Russia. You know, there was a time when the windows were open. A lot of probably our listeners may have gone to mission trips to Russia after the wall came down. I trained some of the first military police officers in Eastern Europe after the wall mm-hmm. came down back in my previous role as in anti-terrorism. But those doors closed quickly, and we saw Russia as Vladimir Putin came back to power to begin to crack down on anything but the Russian Orthodox Church. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, yes. Unfortunately, Russian Orthodox Church is a part of the regime. It's a, like department of the some special services of the Kremlin regime, and they weaponize it the faith. It's like the same like in the Iran. Right. They weaponize the Muslim faith against Israel, against all the world. The same picture in Russia.
So what has been happening since the Russian invasion into Ukraine as it pertains to pastors, churches, religious leaders? Have they been targeting those individuals?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The war was started, the first phase of war was started 10 years ago. Immediately when they invaded in the Donbas, the eastern part of Ukraine, immediately they started to target in different groups, including evangelicals. Just a week ago, it was 10 years after the four evangelical ministers was killed in the city of Slavyansk.
Okay, some would say, well, yeah, it's a war. People are going to get killed. That's tragic. But can you specifically say they're targeting religious leaders?
Yes, they're specifically targeting four evangelicals and other independent religion groups.
There's reports that they're torturing these religious leaders.
Yes, yes, many of them in prisons. It's not just Baptists, but also Pentecostals, Adventists, Greek Catholics there. Many of them in prison and torturers.
For what reason?
They just moved them to the Russian Orthodox Church, or they call them like American agents, and they need some secrets from America.
So they tend to see evangelicals as agents for the West?
Yes. It's not just new narrative. It was used by KGB on the Soviet time. The all the time, FSB, KGB, the Russians, special services, they call evangelicals as American CIA agents against the Russians.
And that's carrying over into Ukraine.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
So how many churches have, I mentioned there's like 630. I mean, that was an older report. I mean, are we still seeing the destruction of churches?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, every day it's continued. Just 3 days ago, the beautiful church in the Chasiv Yar city was just bombed in the Kharkiv region. A few weeks ago, it was the missile strike in the city of Kupiansk, and they killed the pastors there, the Pentecostal church, and destroyed absolutely church building.
Now, there's evidence has emerged that some of these missiles are coming from Iran. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We saw this evil empire, as a President Reagan tell, evil empire united together, like Northern Korea, Iran, and Russia together. Northern Korea sent ballistic missiles and the artillery weapon for the Russia, but Iran sent them thousand drones, called named Shahid. And every night, every single night, I'm living there, I'm a witness of that, every single night, Iranian drones have a massive attacks in the Ukraine, and the Iranians trained themselves last 2 years how to operate these drones in the real battlefield against future attack against Israel, for the future attack in Israel. And it's coming, just happened a few days ago in the Holy Land of Israel.
Now, Pavlo, you served in the parliament. You're not in the parliament right now, but you served in the Ukrainian parliament. There is, there's concern here in the United States among conservatives. And I put this with the backdrop of the propaganda that has been identified coming from Russia, that they're trying to elevate these voices of isolation. And I would describe myself, quite frankly, as a rational isolationist. I don't believe America should get involved in everything, but I do think this is a very strategic and important war that is unfolding, because if Vladimir Putin rolls through Ukraine, he's not going to stop there.
Absolutely. Up next, it will be Romania, Moldova, or Baltic countries, or Poland. We right now like a wall of security. Actually, it's our role long time, but first of all, in this time.
You have said to me that this is a spiritual war.
Yes. Yes.
Explain that.
Yes, the spiritual reasons of this war is because the Ukraine, it's the largest evangelical group in the European continent. Ukraine became in Christianity 1,036 years ago when the King Vladimir, our king, was baptized, all the nation became in Christianity. And from that ancient times, we started to be the largest missionary group in this territory of Eurasia, territory of darkness. When the Soviet Union was collapsed, evangelicals just sent 1,000 missionaries everywhere in Russia and Central Asia, Caucasia, Middle East, Northern Africa, but especially Russia and Central Asia countries. And we absolutely understand how evil hates Ukraine, because no one former Soviet republic do not have the same numbers of evangelicals and Christians. Just Baptists, just one denomination, have a more than 50 seminaries to preparing the to train the missionaries for this mission work.
So do you think, that looking at the, when you say spiritual battle, it's something I talk about here often, is that there is a realm of the spiritual beyond the physical that we see. There's a physical war going there, but there's a spiritual war that is going on as well. Do you think these, speak to this issue of these allegations of corruption, and that's why there are some in Congress that do not want to send any more money to Ukraine. Is that real, or is that kind of part of the spiritual battle to cloud the issue?
Yeah, we have problem with corruption. It's true, because country which was under atheistic communistic regime more than 70 years, it's this that's seen inside us. And this is the one of the part of the spiritual battle against that evil, against corruption. And this is a role of the churches in Ukraine to stand against corruption, and we try to do that. It's needed some time. It's needed some prayer and fasting, but we try to fight against corruption also. Also, one more our spiritual field, it's to be Bible Belt for the European continent, such a liberal continent,
right.
pro-family, pro-life issues. As you know, I'm a conservative movement executive secretary. It's one more spiritual reason for this time.
So you see the vision of Ukraine as being a kind of a Bible Belt?
Absolutely, yes. The Ukraine is in the top 10 religious countries in the European continent, and together with the Western European Christian nations, we like Bible Belt for the liberal European continent.
We're almost out of time, Pavlo. What would you ask of Christians in America, the churches in America, to be thinking and doing as it pertains to our brothers and sisters like you in Ukraine?
First of all, we would like to say thank you for your prayers and supporting, because many churches pray and support us for the humanitarian urgent needs. Second, we're asking your prayers and supporting, especially for this week, appropriation bill. Ask your congressmen to help us. Next, let's create strategic partnership between Christians, evangelicals, conservatives in U.S. and Christians and conservatives in Ukraine to do our missionary ministry, global missionary ministry, and to protect our values.
30 seconds, Pavlo. What happens if the United States does not continue its aggressive support of Ukraine?
It will be Russians come and kill us, everybody of us. It will be a big tragedy in the center of Europe. I hope God can protect us, but we are looking for the protection from His angels. And I have this book, and it's a real story here how God physically protect us many times, including my city, and I am a witness how God created a storm in the Black Sea and stopped Russian Navy fleet.
Pavlo, I want to thank you for your courage.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and we will pray and we will stand with you.
Thank you, brother.
Folks, we're out of time for today, but I do want to encourage you to pray.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Family Research Council, and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.